Good afternoon. You're listening to Camp SK News for Tuesday, March 24th. I'm Taylor Heckert. The U.S. Interior Department held its second round of tribal consultations on subsistence hunting and fishing on federal land last week. Tribal leaders were invited to attend the meeting at the agency's Fish and Wildlife Service headquarters in Anchorage or online. The gatherings, which have been closed to the public, gave tribal and Alaska Native Corporation leaders a chance to question the Interior Department about a Safari Club International petition to reform federal subsistence management. The Alaska Federation of Natives is among dozens of organizations fighting the proposals, which call for eliminating public and private seats on the Federal Subsistence Board and limiting them to the heads of five federal agencies. AFN co-chair Gayla Hossett says tribes fear this would result in poor decision-making because federal managers are not from Alaska and rotate in and out of the state.
How is that one person coming from the lower 48 going to understand certain areas around Alaska, the landscape, the snow conditions, the water conditions? What is life like out there? What does a wildlife population look like? How hard is it to harvest moose? Harvesting moose is easy in some areas and really hard with different terrain in different parts of Alaska.
The Interior Department is taking public comment on the Safari Club proposals until March 30th. The period was extended in February after complaints that more time was needed. Nathan McCohen, president of the St. George Village Corporation, is pushing for another extension.
Subsistence is a complex issue. It's been a complex issue. It will remain a complex issue. And swift action on this could create unintended consequences that everybody wants to avoid.
The Safari Club says its proposals would streamline wildlife management and give more authority to the state. Opponents say they threaten the rural subsistence priority guaranteed under federal law. If the Interior Department decides to consider the Safari Club's petition, a rulemaking process would begin, as well as another round of public comment. Around 25,000 Alaskans lost all or part of their health insurance subsidies in 2026 due to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That left many with skyrocketing health insurance costs, and enrollment in healthcare.gov declined by about 10%. Others are likely to lose Medicaid in the coming years due to new work requirements. So, Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra dug into options for getting affordable healthcare without insurance.
Having thousands more uninsured Alaskans can spell financial disaster for individuals, families, and the state. One main reason is that when people are uninsured, they tend not to get care until it's a true emergency. Jared Kosin, who heads the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association, says people often end up in the ER.
I mean, that's the most expensive place to get healthcare in the entire healthcare system.
ERs have to provide medical care even if people can't pay their bills, and that drives up healthcare costs for everyone. So I wanted to find out what kinds of options are available to Alaskans without insurance, especially for preventative care that could prevent high bills, heartache, and trips to the ER. Experts like Kosin were hesitant to even talk about non-insurance options. He wants to find more ways Alaskans can be covered. But he suggested that if people are stressed out about accessing care, they can reach out to their provider.
Ask them directly if they have any suggestions and see if they can come up with anything. And I know in the hospitals we have charity care programs.
He says some doctors' offices also have charity programs. And some clinics offer free or sliding scale care. There are four other health insurance alternatives accessible for most Alaskans, some of which are newly allowed in the state. The first are healthcare sharing ministries. They're faith-based organizations where members share healthcare costs. But as the Alaska Division of Insurance points out on their website, these organizations don't have to follow health insurance regulations. And there's no legal requirement for them to cover health costs for members. The second option is memberships with primary care provider clinics.
It covers their annual exams that they have, all their annual lab work, their annual flu shot, pneumonia vaccines, those kind of things that people need.
That's Cindy Alkire at Arete Family Care in Anchorage, which offers a direct primary care membership.
And then we also allow three other visits per year, sick visits for things that are going on or chronic conditions.
The plans are affordable compared to most health insurance. For adults under 45, it's $125 a month, and it's $90 a month for kids, including childhood vaccines. There are several clinics in Alaska offering memberships like this, but the plans don't cover things like x-rays, hospital visits, or some expensive medications. The third option is health discount plans. You may have heard of GoodRx, which is a free prescription discount plan, but there are also paid discount plans for dental care and vision, hearing aids, lab work, and less commonly, healthcare. They're nothing like health insurance, but they can make it cheaper to pay out of pocket. And if the worst happens, there's a fourth option. It's a safety net program that can get people free care for complex medical needs. Melinda Freeman is executive director of Anchorage Project Access.
We provide specialty medical, dental, and mental health care that's provided for people who are unable to access care, this type of care, through their primary care doctors.
It's free and includes complex care like cancer treatment or surgeries. It's available to uninsured people or those awaiting enrollment for Medicaid. But it requires treatment in Anchorage and a healthcare provider referral. Although people can refer themselves for dental care and mental health care programs. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
You can find links to the programs mentioned and more details on the web version of this story at alaskapublic.org. A Ketchikan jeweler will have to pay $60,000 to the state and restitution to four customers for selling fake gold. It's according to a settlement filed in Ketchikan Superior Court last week. State prosecutors filed a lawsuit in May of 2024 against Sony Inc., which owns Flawless Fine Jewelry in downtown Ketchikan on Front Street, right in front of the cruise ship docks. Company director Sunita Lakwani is also listed as one of the defendants. Undercover investigators with the state purchased what was represented as gold quartz mined in northern Alaska and handmade primarily by Ketchikan-based jewelers. In reality, the jewelry was from Southern California. What was misrepresented as natural gold quartz and 24-karat gold nuggets was often low-purity 14-karat gold and sometimes contained no gold at all. Salespeople also told undercover investigators that natural gold quartz only occurs in Alaska and can only be legally purchased in Alaska, which is false. Assistant Attorney General Ian Engelbeck was the lead attorney on the case.
When a business misrepresents its goods like that, it doesn't just hurt the guests who get fooled by these misrepresentations. It also hurts every honest business that's trying to compete with businesses that are not representing their goods truthfully.
In a permanent injunction, the state ordered Sony Inc. to truthfully represent the origin of its products and required the business to refrain from using the word Alaskan to describe any of its products without having documentation that the raw materials were sourced here. The company is also open to being audited by state investigators and is ordered to clearly tag all jewelry containing fake gold as imitation stone. Additionally, Sony Inc. will have to make three payments of $20,000 to the state by October 1st of this year. They're also required to pay restitution payments to four customers who were misled by store employees, totaling nearly $9,000. Engelbeck said in Southeast Alaska, salespeople misrepresenting Alaska-themed goods to visitors isn't uncommon.
And after we had filed this lawsuit against Sony Inc., we sent a copy of this lawsuit to jewelry stores across the state, reminding them of their obligations to sell their goods truthfully.
The store Flawless Fine Jewelry is currently closed and the phone number listed online is disconnected, likely for the tourist off-season, but the state reports they are still doing business. They cannot be reached for comment. If the United Nations had a house band in the 1960s is the tagline for Pink Martini, a band from Portland, Oregon that will play in Sitka and Juneau next month. The series of concerts will benefit the same group that brought Portugal the Man to Southeast last year, with funds going toward rebuilding a Tlingit clan house in Sitka. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
In the mid-90s, there was a campaign to amend the Oregon Constitution that sought to restrict gay rights. Thomas Lauderdale, a young political activist and pianist, was fighting against it, and music was the means. Lauderdale reached out to the Del Rubio triplets after seeing them on the star-studded Pee Wee's Playhouse Christmas special.
You keep saying you got something for me.
They lived in a triple-wide mobile home in San Pedro, California. they wore matching miniskirts, matching booties, and they had huge hair and played guitar, and they sang covers of Walk Like an Egyptian and Whip It.
He brought them to Portland, Oregon, to do a series of concerts campaigning against the ballot measure in nursing homes, hospitals, even Rotary meetings.
And at the end of the set, they would very sweetly say, please vote no on Measure 13.
At the end of the Triplets' week on tour, Lauderdale had planned a community-wide concert, but he needed an opening act. So he says he threw on a Betsy Johnson cocktail dress, hopped on stage, and Pink Martini was born. Growing to over a dozen musicians, they became the house band for political fundraising in Portland, and soon an internationally renowned, genre-defying group.
Somebody told me, I don't know who, whenever you are sad and blue, and you're feeling all alone and left behind, just take a look inside you and you'll find.
And now, Pink Martini will travel to Sitka and Juneau in April for two benefit concerts for Cat Leanne Collective, a nonprofit working to revitalize Tlingit clan houses in Southeast, starting with the Point House in Sitka. Clan houses are cultural centers for Tlingit people, places of ritual, community, and tradition. It's a project that Pink Martini is happy to support. The band, known as the Little Orchestra, performs in numerous styles, from jazz to classical to pop, and in over 30 different languages.
We're sort of musical diplomats and ambassadors, and we sort of believe in the power of bringing people together through music. We have a 31-year history of doing this, and we're so delighted to be coming to Alaska to be continuing in that tradition.
The shore, hold me close, sway me more, like a flower bending.
Storm Large is one of the band's lead singers, and this will be her second time touring in Alaska with them. She says often a band's lead singer is the mouthpiece that carries its identity, but Pink Martini is different.
It's like laughing. Kind of. It's a big variety show, and everybody has an important role in unison. But I see Pink Martini as a collective of wonderful, amazing, brilliant stars in their own right.
My name is Jericho Blang. My Tlingit name is Srutin, and I am of the Raven Moiety Kiksati clan from Sitka, Alaska.
Hope Lang says the work to rebuild the clan house started from a conversation with the late Bertha Karras.
We walked by this chunk of property on our way to her house, and she said to me, just casually, that's your people's property and you need to get it back. At the time, I really had no idea or no concept as to what tied me to that land and what her impression was that I had any business being a part of it. So kind of led me down a rabbit hole to understanding what had been there prior.
What came next was over a decade of work toward repatriating the land where the Point House stood. Hope Lang now stewards the land on behalf of the Kiksati. They hope to break ground on a 21st century clan house sometime in the next year.
And so to honor the property, I said we need to rebuild. Not just structurally, because this is a brick and mortar project, but we need to rebuild spiritually. And there's ideas that tie to that property that I just felt like the time was ripe.
The group has received federal grant funding for their work and succeeded in getting the National Trust for Historic Preservation to recognize Sitka's Indian Village as an endangered historic place. They're also remodeling a 19th century Kiksati clan house four doors down from the Point House. Hope Lang says fundraising is key to keep the work going. Last year, Cat Leanne Collective brought several bands, including Portugal the Man, to Southeast, and the concert was a resounding success. So he reached out to his longtime friend Lauderdale with Pink Martini, who jumped on board.
This year, bringing Pink Martini into the fold, it really creates this open dialogue of like, we are inviting you. The purchasing of a ticket is an invitation to be a guest in our process. You could be part of this restoration, this regeneration, this restorative practice.
Hope Lang says Pink Martini's music encompasses the name of the show, which is Hit Woosh Day Yada Kitscht, or Dancing Our House Together. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
For KFSK, I'm Taylor Heckert.